on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm Jordan in the clutch, boy. You bitten on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot. I'm gonna take the last shot. I'm
joining
the clutch, boy.
Alrighty, guys, it is time for another episode of the Auto Bid. I am Aaron Robinson, joined as always by my twin brother Andrew Robinson. Today, we got a special guest. We got my guy Sean Paul, man, one of the fastest rising young media members in the country right now, man. Definitely pleased to have him on, man. We're gonna give Sean a little bit of an opportunity to give himself a little bit of an intro, talk a little bit about what he's into these days, man. But first, we want to remind you guys, as always, man, make sure you guys are giving us a like, a retweet on Twitter, man. You see this podcast, man, when you hear us on Google Podcasts, Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to our podcast at, man, make sure you give us a rating. 5 stars only, please. You know what I'm saying? We don't need no bad business on the All Facts resume. Make sure you guys are spreading the word, man, telling a friend and tell a friend about the Auto Bid, man. And also, make sure you guys are listening to my guy Pull Up Tay's music. That was him on the intro, man, his new project. Why Stop Now is out on all platforms, man. So if you like hip-hop music, man, definitely go in and tap into my man Pull Up Tay. He's one of the hottest rappers out of the DMV, man. But like I said, man, we're pleased to be joined by Sean Paul today, man. He's someone who works extremely hard, man, doing some work with the Future 68, doing some writing for Making the Madness, man. He's got a bunch of new ventures that he's into now as well, man. So I'm going to give him, you know, an opportunity to kind of tell you guys a little bit about himself, what he's working on now, man. So, Sean, you know, here's the floor, bro.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's my second time on, so very happy to be on once again. You could follow me on Twitter at SeanPaulCBB. You'll see all the stuff I do on there, so just give me a follow there. Doing some stuff with the Field of 68, weekly mid-major top 25 poll. You guys are voters in it. And, you know, I was on the Field of 68 after dark yesterday. I'm on there every now and then. So definitely tune into that every night, whether I'm on it or not. It's the best college basketball show there is. And, you know, I'm on it occasionally. And it's always fun to be on with the load of really good people on the show.
Shoot, man. Well, first of all, man, you know, shout out to my guy, Sean Paul. You know, my guy just cracked 7,000 followers on Twitter, man. So, you know, make sure you guys continue to run that up, man. But, you know, you mentioned the Field of 68 mid-major rankings. And, you know, like you said, we're definitely, you know, one of the voters on that. But, you know, we here at All Facts, we do our own rankings as well, mid-major rankings. And I kind of wanted to dive into that a little bit, man, about these week five mid-major rankings, man. So, Sean, man, I mean, obviously, like I said, you do your poll over at Field of 68. But, you know, based on the week five rankings, I mean, what are your takeaways? What are some teams that you like? And who are some teams that you may think could be dangerous as we're getting closer and closer toward conference play?
Well, I like that you have Colorado State 1 in your guys' rankings. That's a positive. They definitely should be ranked nationally. It's a bit of a travesty that they're not currently ranked, but, you know, they'll get there if they beat Mississippi State this weekend. At least I'd hope they're ranked if they beat Mississippi State. Who knows at this point?
They should already be ranked. The fact that they're not ranked now is a travesty.
Yeah, I agree. No, I agree for sure. Dayton, they're probably going to drop out of your guys' rankings now after losing yesterday, but that would have been a big opportunity for them winning yesterday at SMU. They played tough down the stretch, but they just dug themselves too big of a hole to get out of, so it was just a tough game there. I think your guys' rankings are really good, though. Like, I don't have too many questions about it. I mean, San Diego State at 9, that's probably going to drop off a little bit. They don't look like a tournament team at this point. Their offense isn't very good, but they have an okay resume right now. But when it comes down to it, I definitely think they're going to drop down quite a bit.
Yeah, I will say on the Dayton tip, I personally didn't want to have them in the top 25, but Drew has been adamant about having them in the top 25 after their little run that they had down there in Orlando, obviously, you know, winning that ESPN tournament down there. But when you lose 3 bye games at home the way that they did, I was like, yo, if they don't win 10, 15 straight games, I don't want them in the top 25. But, you know,
when you think about it, though, it's like, so you beat Kansas, you beat Miami. That's kind of a whatever when they're not very good. You beat Belmont. But when you compare it, it's like, all right, you lose to Austin Peay, you lost to Lipscomb, and you lost to UMass Lowell. So I feel like resume-wise, like UMass Lowell, is definitely a quadrant four loss. I feel like that kind of cancels out the Kansas win. And then when you look at the loss like Austin Peay, that probably cancels out the Belmont win.
They got faked.
I mean, it's weird. I don't know that I've seen anything like this. Like, they just lost so many games they should have won. Like, if they would win all those games that they've won, I mean, they still would have lost to SMU probably, but then that's just one loss this year. They'd be ranked nationally probably.
It was the way they lost them. Like, they lost three straight bye games at home, and Austin Peay is a team that has lost on their resume to Howard. Who else beat Austin? I mean, they had some bad losses on their resume. Now, Howard is a lot better, but I had an opportunity to see Howard versus Austin Peay about a week or two ago. But that's not a game that you lose, like, that day in programs lose on their home court, you know. So I was like, you know, I'm not high on Dayton. But San Diego State is a team, obviously, with a bit of pedigree. And the thing about San Diego State that I like is that they're going to guard, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's something that's going to travel. When you get into conference play, you're going on the road. Even though their offense at times, you know, looks a bit stagnant, they're going to defend you, you know, night in and night out, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's going to give them a chance. Even on nights where they're not making shots, to make some noise, especially in conference play. I mean that the Mountain West obviously is good at the top with, you know, Colorado State and Utah State and San Diego State. And obviously we're going to have Wyoming, who just got drubbed last night. But we hope they can bounce back from that. And who knows if Nevada can get back on track. And obviously they have two of the best guards in the league. But, you know, I think they're going to have a shot. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if San Diego State winds up, you know, winning the Mountain West tournament just because of the fact that, you know, they're a team that I think it's going to guard and their experience. So, I don't know. I'm not ready to close the book on San Diego State yet.
Well, the one thing with San Diego State for me, and I went on a radio in San Diego yesterday and kind of talked about it a little bit with them. One of the things about it is it's not just that, you know, they haven't been good offensively. It's that the way that they've played, like against UT Arlington, against Cal State Fullerton now yesterday. Matt Bradley had a really good game yesterday, but nobody else is really contributing. Like, there's not a bona fide number two guy that you have that can score the basketball. Like, you look last year, you had Matt Mitchell, and if it wasn't him, it was Jordan Shackle. Terrell Gomez could step in and hit some shots. That was your top three scorers. They're all gone now. Matt Bradley, he's been really good the last two games, 44 points, 22 each of the last two games. So he's been good right now, but he struggled early in the season. Lamont Butler, who is one of your top scorers, is hurt right now. So who's going to be that number two guy? Is it going to be like a Keith Dinwiddie? Is it going to be a Keyshawn Johnson? Nathan Menz is not really a big-time scorer. Maybe Trey Pulliam, but he's been up and down scoring-wise throughout his career. So that's where I question San Diego State. There's just not enough scoring there for me. But Brian Dutcher is one of the best coaches in basketball because he coaches guys to defend really hard, and that's what they do every season.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, I more so trust the coaching more than anything because Dutcher does such a good job with this program over the past few years. And I think Trey Pulliam also is going to get going. I mean, this guy, obviously, you know, this is kind of his first year in that, you know, in more of a lead role for San Diego State. Obviously, the past few years, he's been more of a complimentary piece. But this year, he's going to have to score some points. And I think as time goes on, he's got to hopefully, you know, can get going. But, you know, we'll definitely see, man. I want to talk about another Mountain West team. We talked about Colorado State, man. I mean, obviously, their team that's number one in our rankings. They're undefeated. They just had a huge win at home this past weekend over St. Mary's. I mean, what about them, you know, makes them so good? And why are you so high on them? Obviously, you know, Drew and I are high on them as well. But, you know, what is it that makes the Colorado State team so good, in your opinion?
Well, first off, Nico Medved is a great coach. That's a big part of it. But when you look at their roster, they have two guys who are two of the best players at their respective positions in college basketball. Isaiah Stevens is outstanding at the point guard, and David Roddy is a really good player. He's probably the Mountain West Player of the Year right now. He's been fantastic this year. Really could get some All-American consideration. And the biggest thing that I've said all offseason is that these guys could have transferred up. They could have went anywhere they wanted in the country. But the culture that they have at Colorado State and probably encourage them to stay. I mean, these days, you know, transfers happen, transfers up, transfers down. You look at a guy like Jamal Cain at Oakland. He was solid at Marquette for a number of years, but now he's killing it at Oakland. So these guys could have went up, but they decided to stay at Colorado State and try to help bring the Rams to another NCAA tournament. So you have that. They can play small. They can play Roddy at the five. They could play big, put Deshaun Thomas at the five. He's close to 7 foot. They all shoot the ball really well. They're one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country, 44% from deep on the season. They're deep. They're not great defensively. I think that could improve a little bit. It was a lot better last year. I think last year is a little bit of a outlier compared to recent Colorado State defenses. I don't think they were as good as they were last year, but I don't think they're as bad as they have been this year defensively. But their offense is one of the best in college basketball. Nobody in the Mountain West has an offense anywhere near their offense.
You know, I mean, I definitely agree. I think for me, the key for them is Isaiah Stevens. I mean, he's so good for them this year. I mean, this dude is averaging 7 assists and just one turnover per game in 33 minutes. I mean, that is an absolutely absurd ratio for a point guard. I mean, anytime you got a guy that can facilitate the way that he does and control the pace of the game the way that he does and not turn it over, it's huge for them, man. I think, you know, he's really what makes that team go, man. Then you have a guy like David Roddy, who's really a mismatch nightmare. I mean, this dude is 6'5", but he's 250 pounds. You know what I'm saying? So he can play the guard. He can step out and hit threes. He can switch. And also, if you need him to bang in the post, he's big enough where he can do that as well, man. I mean, this dude is right now is averaging 20-8, and he's shooting like almost – what is he shooting? 46% from three-point line right now, man. I mean, this dude is
– much improved from last year, three-point-wise.
From last year, man. I mean, I think those are the biggest things. You mentioned last year he shot 27% from three. This year he's up – at 47. So, I mean, he's been huge for them. And I think those two are going to be, you know, obviously both of those guys should be first team All Mountain West guys. And Roddy should definitely probably, you know, get some looks for that honorable mention All American type category as well, man. But you want to dive into our number two ranked team in the poll right now. And that is San Francisco. Obviously, they're in the WCC, obviously, with Gonzaga, BYU, St. Mary's. They're currently undefeated as well. And a lot of people have kind of, you know, been talking a lot about USF, man, but do you think that this team has what it takes to compete with the likes of Gonzaga, BYU, and St. Mary's at the top of the WCC?
Not with Gonzaga. Maybe with BYU. Definitely with St. Mary's. I think they're probably better in St. Mary's, definitely, right now. I would say they're close to BYU. Gonzaga, I think, is just ahead. Even though they've lost two games, I think they've proven time and time again that they're the class of the WCC. But San Francisco is good, 10-0. They shoot the ball really well. Ewan Masalski coming in from San Diego has been a big time presence down low, second leading scorer, big time rebounder. He's been very good for this Dons team. And Jamari Bouye has just been fantastic. He took over in the second half against Fresno State yesterday, which brought San Francisco to their 10-0 record. This is an NCAA tournament level team. We'll see if they get there, but they have the talent to win a game or two in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where I wanted to go with this. I mean, in the recent years, I mean, the WCC has been a league that, well, obviously Gonzaga is penciled in every year. And they usually have either BYU or St. Mary's, you know, in the tournament, usually for like a two-bid league. Do you think that this is the year where the WCC can get three or maybe four bids in the NCAA tournament? Like, I mean, do you think San Francisco can kind of sneak into that at-large picture? Like, how do you feel about them as far as, you know, the NCAA tournament resume?
I think four bids is more likely than two, but I think at least three. I have four at most, at least three, because St. Mary's at this point, they've lost to Wisconsin and they've lost to Colorado State. So they don't have any bad losses. They have some solid wins mixed in there. I guess we don't know how good of a win Oregon is at this point. They haven't looked very good this season, but they've done good this year. They're a good team. They were in the NIT last year. I think San Francisco, as long as they avoid bad losses, you can't lose to Portland. You can't lose to Pacific, you can't lose to San Diego. If they can avoid losses like that, I think they'll be in the NCAA tournament also. And I think BYU and Gonzaga are already lost in the NCAA tournament. So I think we're already at two. I guess things can change, like BYU could struggle, but I don't see that happening. But St. Mary's and San Francisco, probably both on the bubble, but I think both get in.
Yeah, I mean, I think San Fran is going to have to, like you said, they have to. I think they're going to have to beat Arizona State. They're going to see them, obviously, on the 19th. Who have, you know, struggled. And I think obviously you can't lose to Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon's a really good team. But obviously, I think if they win that game and they were able to – if they go into the WCC play undefeated, now I think that we're talking about a team that can you know, pay themselves into the tournament. If you can go, you know, and knock off a St. Mary's and knock off a BYU once, I don't think they're going to beat Gonzaga. But if you can get a BYU or a St. Mary's on your home court and win, and you go into the tournament with – what, maybe like four losses, you lose it. So you lose it like twice. once to St. Mary's and once to BYU. Let's say you have a stinker one night, lose to a Santa Clara or something like that. You go into a tournament with five losses, and I think you give yourself a really good chance to get an at-large, bid.
Especially with how weak some of the – I mean, not really bubble teams at this point. Like Virginia, they just don't look like a tournament team. The ACC as a whole, that's like a four-bid league right now. Like, they're not looking super hot right now, which means that that's going to open opportunities for other leagues to get more teams in. So that's where I think the WCC could sneak in and get that four.
We spoke about that a few weeks ago on our pod, but the other conferences just looking so bad. Like the ACC obviously is down. The Pac-12 is down. Even the Big Ten isn't as good as it's been, man. You have teams, obviously, we talked about the A-10. I mean, they've them teams have – I mean, it's looking like a one big league right now with Richmond kind of playing the way it's had. And obviously
– Oh, yeah. If the season ended today and St. Bonaventure won the conference tournament, they're the only team getting in. Like, I'm not even sure anybody else would be in the NIT. Like, maybe Dayton, maybe Richmond, but, like, they don't seem really close at all.
Yeah, no, it's tough, man. Obviously, our Jordan Mason Patriots played themselves out of relevancy in a heartbeat. Hey,
they were one of the best teams in college basketball for a week. I think that's an accomplishment.
Yeah, man.
I think the thing about it, I think that's more telling about what Maryland was than anything. You know, I told you guys that at the time. I'm like, hey, I just don't think Maryland's that good.
No, man, but you gotta understand, at that time, like, at the time, they were both undefeated at the time, like, you know what I'm saying? Basically got the win.
Maryland could easily have, like, one win right now. Like, if you think about it, they could have lost to Hofstra, they could have lost to George Washington.
They
should have
lost to Hofstra, they could have lost to Vermont, they could have lost to GW. Yeah. Like,
they could really just have one win right now, which would be kind of crazy.
That would be absolutely absurd.
Man, I do want to ask, man, because, you know, we kind of skipped over this a little bit with Colorado State. But, I mean, Sean, I can remember a time when we looked back on the Mountain West and, you know, you had teams like San Diego State and UNLV that were making, like, deep runs into the NCAA tournament, like second weekend type of runs. What do you think the ceiling is for this Colorado State team as far as NCAA tournament? Do you think that this is a team that could make it into the Sweet 16, Elite Eight type of team? Like, what do you think their ceiling is when we're talking about this team come March?
You know, I've kind of dropped this prediction, like, recently the past few days. Like, I'm not saying they're going to be as good because they're not good defensively, but I think they could be a team we look at in a couple months and see, okay, Colorado State's ranked top 10, and they're undefeated still, kind of. Or they'll play Alabama. Maybe they lose there, but kind of like San Diego State a couple of years ago. I don't know if they're as good, but I think they're kind of in the same range. This is the best team the Mountain West has seen since then, and I think it's one of the best – overall teams in the Mountain West over the last decade. I mean, this is a really good team. I think they can win games in the NCAA tournament. If their offense is clicking, there's very few teams that can keep up with them.
For sure, man. Well, definitely want to switch gears a little bit now. Obviously, we talked about the West Coast school with the Mountain West and the WCC one. I want to get over to the East Coast a little bit down south, but one of my favorite conferences over the last few years has been the SoCon, man. And obviously, Chattanooga has been awesome, you know, this season, man. And obviously, I think, you know, they're the favorite heading into conference play. Who's the one team in the SoCon that you think could give them, you know, the biggest run for their money come conference play?
I would still say Furman. They're still a really good team. You know, Garrett Heen hasn't played as well recently, but Jalen Slauson, Alex Hunter, Mike Bothwell, that's a really good trio to have. Bob Ritchie's a good coach. And to me, it's always crazy that Furman, they've been really good over the past 5-6 years, but they haven't made an NCAA tournament since like the 70s. Like, it's been a long time since they've been in the tournament. So I'd assume they're motivated to get to that NCAA tournament. So I think they're the biggest competitor to Chattanooga.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Furman train as well, man. I love Bothwell. I love Slauson, and I love also Alex Hunter. Also, you mentioned Bob Ritchie. He's one of the most underrated coaches, in my opinion, in the country, man. You got teams, obviously, like Wofford, UNCG, ETSU. Even Samford right now is sitting at 7-2 right now.
Yeah, I'd like Samford. I don't think they're there right now, but – you know, they've done a really good job getting talent from the portal. Quest Glover, been one of the best guards in the league, been one of the best guards in the country. Wesley Cardet, 4-star recruit, going to Samford. He had his best game of the year yesterday. He hasn't been great, but I think he's going to get it going. they're going to be a team that pulls off a couple of like wins you see on the road. They're going to be like 6 or 7 point underdogs on the road against somebody, and they're going to pull out some wins. That's the kind of talent they have.
You know, I think both of those, I think Sanford is good. I mean, I think ETSU is going to be in the mix. Obviously, they had some good wins, obviously, over Murray State, which was a really good win, beat Missouri State as well out of the Missouri Valley, which was a good win. And obviously, Wofford had that win over Georgia. Georgia isn't anything special, but they do have that win over Memphis. But then they turned around and lost to Richmond over the weekend, man. So, I don't know, man. I think Wofford's always extremely well coached. And I think that they'll definitely be in the mix as well in the SoCon. And you can't forget about UNCG with, you know, Mike Jones, obviously in his first year after coming over there from Radford. He's done a pretty good job there in his first year at the helm as well. So SoCon's going to be a lot of fun as always, man. But I think, you know, Furman is going to have a chance to really, you know, get hot here come conference play. I mean, the SoCon is going to be a tough conference, but I think it's going to come down to Chattanooga and Furman in the end.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen, you know, the SoCon, you know, in the NCAA tournament the last couple of years. You know, Wofford's always tough. UNC Greensboro is always tough. So, you know, like you said, Sean, man, I'm hoping that Furman can kind of break through that glass ceiling and actually get into the NCAA tournament, because I think that they're a team that could, you know, pull off an upset, man. But, you know, I want to kind of switch over, you know, to another mid-major league, man, that's definitely been a you know, I think surprising so far, and that's the WAC. I think there's been some strong teams, you know, to get started. Obviously, you know, New Mexico State, Cal Baptist, Utah Valley had that huge win over BYU. I mean, when you look at the WAC, I mean, who do you think is the favorite in that league? I mean, I think, first of all, you know, I think we have to, when we're talking about the MAC, the WAC, we have to mention Taron Armstrong over there at Cal Baptist, who's, I mean, a triple-double watch every night, you know, 12 points. Pretty much 8 rebounds, 9 assists a game as a freshman. I mean, I think he's played himself onto the NBA radar so far early on. So, I mean, when you look at the WAC, I mean, who do you think is the best team in that league so far? I mean, any early surprises? I mean, just what are your general thoughts around the league so far?
Definitely New Mexico State as a favorite still for me. They just have too much talent to not win the league in my eyes. But Grand Canyon's in the mix. They play at Arizona State today as we're recording this. Utah Valley, they have that win over BYU. They have some talent. And Trey Woodbury still hasn't played this season, so they've been able to win the games they've won without their top returning scorer in the mix. And then Stephen F. Austin, they're there. They're going to be competitive. Abilene Christian's going to play tough defensively. They're going to be in the mix. But Cal Baptist, they're interesting because they have a lot of talent. Reed Nottage, Trey Armstrong, Taron Armstrong. They have some talent, but the thing about it is it's not going to really matter at the end of the day because they can't play in the tournament because it's their final year of their transition from D2 to D1. So that's kind of what sucks about it. Like, I think the transition thing, I'm not a huge fan of it because this is a team that could win the conference tournament and play in the NCAA tournament, but because of the four-year transition rule, they can't.
Now, what are your thoughts on Utah Valley? Obviously, they had that huge win over BYU that shocked everyone last week. They didn't turn around and lose to Southern Utah last night. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on them? Do you think they have a legitimate shot to compete in that league? And, you know, I mean, what do you think they stand in the hierarchy of the WAC at this point in time?
I think they're probably, like, the third or fourth best team in the league. I think they're definitely behind New Mexico State and Grand Canyon just talent-wise. But Fardaz Amak is a really good player, one of the more productive players in the country. Once Trey Woodbury's back, I think they could be competitive in the league. But I think New Mexico State and Grand Canyon just has too much for them to handle.
Now, what about Abilene? Obviously, you know, they won the league last year. Golden rolled out. But, I mean, what are your thoughts on them? I mean, are they a team that you think can kind of – I mean, they're sitting at 5-2 right now. Do you think that they're going to have a chance to kind of sneak into that, you know, top tier of the league this year?
They still have to win their way. Like, we saw that last year. Their way was forcing turnovers and playing tough defensively. That's been the same thing this year under new coach Brett Tanner. I think we're going to see more of the same this year. If they get some teams not playing to their full effort, then, yeah, they could beat anybody in the conference. But talent-wise, they're definitely below. You know, they're probably like 6th or 7th talent-wise in the league.
Now, you know, we talked about the WAC. We've talked about the SoCon. And, you know, obviously last year we saw Oral Roberts make a run all the way to the Sweet 16. Who is a team from a one big league, you know, no A-10, no Mount West, but a true one big league that you think has the potential to make it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament this season?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, my answer to this most of the time this year has been South Dakota State. Obviously, they lost yesterday to Idaho. They've lost a couple games.
They lost to Idaho?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I did that. I must have missed that.
Yeah, Idaho scored 98.
Wow. That is crazy. Yo, shout out my guy, Mikey Dixon, man. Former Quinnipiac.
He had 36 points.
He has 36. Oh! Yeah.
Or is 35 or 36, yeah.
Oh, look at South Paul breaking news on the auto bid right now.
I don't know how you guys missed this. Wow.
No, I was at Georgetown last night. I wasn't paying attention to anything going on in college basketball last night. I was watching Georgetown UNBC game. I didn't even know he lost to. Wow. I got to call Mikey now. That's shit. That's a huge win for them because they are terrible. Yeah. Like,
hey, now Idaho's going to get it going, though. You know, that new arena, I think facilities wise with the improvements there, I think they're going to get things going over time, but that's a big time like statement win for that program for sure. But South Dakota State, here's the thing, like Noah Friedel went 5 for 24 yesterday from the field. That's probably never going to happen again. He's too good for that to happen. He's one of the best scorers in college basketball so far this year. Baylor Shireman is really good. They're really good offensively. They haven't taken as many threes this year as I thought they're going to. But when they are hitting those threes and they're playing the way they want to play on offense, playing quick, they're going to be a tough out if they're playing a team that struggles offensively. Obviously, it's matchup dependent. But, you know, the Summit League is always high scoring. We saw that with Oral Roberts last year. I think South Dakota State has a talent to win a game or two if the matchup plays into their favor.
Wow, man. I'm about to call my guy, Mikey Dixon, man, after we get off of this podcast. Cause I did not know that happened, man. I'm reading the box score right now, 35 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds.
16 for 16 from the foul line, too.
Jesus, 16 for 16 from the foul line, 7-11 from the floor, 5-7 from three. That is crazy. Shout out to my guy, Mikey Dixon, man. Drew and I played with him at Quinnipiac his rookie year. He was a rookie of the year in the MAC.
That was like 6 years ago at this point, hasn't it?
No, it's been a while. I was a sophomore in college. It literally was. I've been out of college for like 2 years now. So that's crazy, man. Nah, that's awesome, man. I'm happy for Mikey, man, and definitely was surprised to win, man. They were
22-point underdogs.
Yeah, whoever bet on Idaho last night is sitting pretty right now.
I don't know if anybody bet on Idaho. That's like not to win. Like they didn't bet on them. They didn't bet on them to win. Maybe they took the points, but
was the game at Idaho?
Yeah, yeah. That's what makes it crazy. They were 22-point underdogs at home.
That tell you how bad Idaho's been, though, man. That tells you, I mean, like,
if that game's on the road, they're probably like 30-point underdogs.
Literally, no, like literally 30-point underdogs, man. That's crazy, man. But I think this is a good segue, man. Talking about a lot of, you know, mid-major players, man. I want to get who are your three most underrated mid-major guys, man? I mean, you know, obviously, you know, people already people don't really pay attention to mid-major hoops that much until March anyways when you start getting the upsets against Cinderella's, man. But who are three players that you think guys should start paying attention to right now at this point in the season?
Yeah, I was thinking about this question. I'm going to go with three freshmen. For this answer. I'm going to go with Geronimo Rubio De La Rosa from Columbia. He's been really good. One of the best, probably the best freshman in the league. He's already one of the best players in the league, can really score the basketball. He's going to be posting Mike Smith type of numbers at Columbia over the next few years. I'm going to go with Elijah Hutchins Everett. You saw him when Austin Peay played Howard. He's a really good player. He can shoot the ball. He's really strong, creates a lot of space down low. He's going to be a big time player at Austin Peay. He had some high major interest before he committed to Austin Peay. And then I'm going to go with Houston Millett from Pepperdine. Really good shooter, 6'5", athletic. He can defend. He's going to be a nice piece for Pepperdine. And they have a very bright future overall with him, Mike Mitchell Jr., Maxwell Lewis now being eligible. That's a really good trio of freshmen that are going to really build the foundation for Pepperdine over the next few years.
And, man, shout-out to my guy, Elijah Hutchins Everett, man, former PSA Hoops product, man. Shout-out to my guy, Josh Scraber and Tom Espinosa up there in the quiet corner of New England, man. So definitely want to give those guys some love for that, man, because he had a really good year when he was at Putnam, man. But, all right, so we got now three most underrated mid-major players, man. Who would be your mid-major player of the year at this point in time in the season, man, if you had to pick one?
That's tough. I mean, we're including Colorado State in this.
Yes, we are.
Okay. Well, I was thinking maybe David Roddy, but I'm going to go Jamari Bouye after his big game yesterday. He's shooting like 55% from the field, over 40% from deep, 20 a game, number of assists per game on a really good San Francisco team. I think that's deserving of winning this early season mid-major player of the year award.
See, I think that, you know, that's definitely a deserving pick. I'm going to go David Roddy just because, you know, I think that what he's been able to do, you know, 20 points, almost 8 rebounds a game, you know, leading the team in blocks as well. For a Colorado State team that we've obviously already talked at length about, you know, they're undefeated on the season. And I think if we're saying, you know, this guy could potentially be, you know, in a, you know, honorable mention, All-American type of category, man, I think that as of right now, I think that he's a guy who can definitely be in that mid-major player of the year award. Also, man, obviously I got to give – I'm always going to be, you know, be biased to my PSA family. But I think Kyle Lofton, you know, is obviously, you know, an easy choice for this award as well, based on what St. Bonnie's has been able to do this season. I think that – I mean, I think I was listening to the game when they were playing down in Charleston. I mean, this is a guy that I think could be a backup point guard in the league. He's going to get definitely a look as far as playing at the next level based on his physical traits. So I think that if St. Bonnie's is a team that, you know, if they're able to win the A-10 and get into the tournament, you know, I think they're going to get in one way or another. But I think that they're a team that can make a deep run, you know, and we've all seen, you know, once you get in a tournament, you know, if you have the best player on the floor, I think you can, you know, make something special happen. I mean, I think he's the guy that we could be talking a lot about, you know, come March. So, you know, David Ryder would be my pick, but if I could have two picks, I would go Kyle Lofton here as well.
I'm going to go with the guy that is also playing in the Mountain West, does not play for Colorado State, and that's Justin Bean at Utah State. I mean, he is
a good pick. Yeah.
This dude is averaging 22-12, shooting 66% from the floor, 55% from three, and 82% from the foul line with 2 steals and 3 assists per game. For Utah State team, that is really good. I mean, obviously, you know, Colorado State has taken the league by storm, you know, start the league. But I think just Utah State is going to be a team that's going to, you know, get some teams some fits. They got hosed at home versus St. Mary's, and everybody watched that game, which was – that call at the end of that game was
well, unbelievable. Here's the thing.
It was a foul.
Exactly.
But you cannot call that at that point in time in the game. Like
– Yeah, exactly.
Like, you can't call that right there. They battled over if it's BYU. Last night they won. They had some great wins. Obviously, beat Oklahoma, beat New Mexico State as well earlier in the year, man. So they're going to be a team that's going to have something to say about the Mountain West, man. But Beam is a guy. He goes crazy every night, puts up video game numbers, man. And I think he's a guy that's going to get some look at the NBA because of the way that he shoots the ball, his size, but he can score inside and out, man. And I think he's having a tremendous year for Utah State right now.
Yeah, he's been great for sure.
Yes, sir, man. But for our last subject of the day, man, we're going to transition to the biggest game of the weekend, one of the biggest games of the college basketball season. We're going to get the defending national champions, Baylor, going up against Villanova. Obviously, they played each other last year in the NCAA tournament. It's going to be a huge game, man. Obviously, Villanova has played in a ridiculous non-conference schedule already. They already played UCLA, Purdue, Tennessee. Who did they play the other day? They played Syracuse obviously at the Garden, man, and they're going to get their crack at Baylor now. What are you going to be looking for in that game, man? What are your keys to that game? Who do you think is going to win and why?
I think Baylor's going to win because they can really shoot the basketball, they defend. And here's the thing with Villanova. We've already seen it a number of times this year. Late in games, their depth is just not good enough. Their guy, I don't know if they get tired or what, but we've seen that be a problem for them already several times this year, and I think it's a legitimate issue against really good teams. I think we're going to see that be a problem against a Baylor team who plays really tough defensively. I think that the depth is going to be a problem once again. The lack of depth is going to be an issue once again for Villanova, really only playing 6 or 7 deep. Having Damir Cosby Roundtree back is big, but still, like, you're 7 deep at most. So I think Baylor is going to be able to pull out the win here.
Yeah, I mean,
I think based on, you know, Villanova's early season, you know, I think I feel like there's no way they lose to UCLA, Purdue, and Baylor. I mean, this is a team that I think coming into the year, you know, everybody had, you know, I think most people saw them as a team that could make the Final Four. You know, obviously when you're bringing back Colin Gillespie, bringing back Jermaine Simmons, bringing back Justin Moore, and I feel like I think in order for them to be where they want to be at the end of the season, especially When it comes seeding time, from are you on the one line, the two line, the three line? I mean, you can't lose this game to Baylor. I think that they're going to have a heightened sense of urgency going into this game. I think that they're going to be up for it. You know, we talked to Brandon Slater about it on the auto bid last week. He just talked about, you know, the you know, after that Purdue game, after that UCLA game, how they went into film and kind of really focused on the things that they needed to do to kind of improve. And, you know, I'm going to bet on Jay Wright and those guys to get it going and get their first kind of really marquee signature win of the season in this game against Baylor.
I'm going to go with Villanova as well, man. I think I'm going to be looking at the guards, man. We talk about Villanova's guards with Colin Gillespie and Justin Moore. Baylor had great guards too, obviously, and L.J. Cryer and James Akinjo, and also Adam Flagler as well, man. But, I mean, I think if I had to pick a backcourt, I would pick the Villanova backcourt. And you got guys like Jermaine Samuels and Brandon Slater on the wing that are switchable, can defend, versatile. They're going to be able to switch a lot versus Baylor. And obviously, you're going to have you know, the pedigree of Jay Wright versus also Scott Drew, man. But I'm going to give the slight edge to Villanova, man. But I think the key is going to be the guard play, man. Can Colin Gillespie and Justin Moore outplay Cryer, Akinjo, and Adam Flagler, man? And if they do, I think Villanova wins that basketball game. But we're going to see what happens, though, man. This has been a great episode, man. I want to thank Sean Paul again for coming on today with us, man. He does amazing, amazing work. He dropped his tags in the beginning of the episode, but just in case you forgot, he's at Sean Paul CBB on Twitter. So make sure you guys are tapping in with his work, man, with the Field of 68, all the writing that he does, man, and everything else that he's doing right now. Man, he does a great job covering college basketball. So I want to thank him again for coming on today, man. And also, I want to remind you guys, as always, man, make sure you guys are giving us a like, giving us a retweet on social media, man. We do appreciate everybody that shares our content, man, and also giving us a rating on Apple Music, on Spotify, on Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to our podcast, man. It truly does go a long way, man. We really appreciate each and every one of you guys that shares our content, man, and tunes in because it really does help us out a lot in terms of getting this podcast out to the right people, man. And as always, man, last but not least, I want to remind you guys to tune in to my guy Pull Up Tay's music. His new project, Why Stop Now, is out on all platforms, man, so make sure you guys are tapping in to his content, man, and it's gonna be him on the outro, man. So until next time, that's all, folks.
You bitten on me. It's time to get a check, boy. Check, boy. You want a sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me. What's the topic of discussion? What we talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy.